Welcome to the EU Startups Podcast. Sit back and enjoy the show hosted by Marcin Lewandowski.
You're a startup founder. Finding product market fit is probably your number one priority, but to land bigger customers, you also need security compliance. And obtaining your SOC 2 or ISO 27001 certification can open those big doors, but they take time and energy, pulling you away from building and shipping. That's where Vonta comes in. Vonta is the all-in-one compliance solution, helping startups like yours get audit ready and build a strong security foundation quickly and painlessly. How? Vonta automates the manual security tasks that slow you down, helping you streamline your audit. And the platform connects you with trusted VCSOs to build your program, auditors to get you through audits quickly, and a marketplace for essentials like pen testing. So whether you're closing your first deal or gearing up for growth, Vonta makes compliance easy. Join over 8,000 companies, including many Y Combinator and Techstars startups, who trust Vonta. Simplify compliance and get $1,000 off at vonta.com/EU startups. That's vanta.com/EU startups.
Hey everyone, this is Marcin Lewandowski and you're listening to the EU Startups Podcast. My guest today is Paulina Jansz, founding partner at Linux Impact Capital, top 100 most influential woman in the VC and startup scene in Europe, and top 10 investors in Germany. Paulina Jansz, welcome to the show. It's such a pleasure to have you.
Thank you.
So, Pauli, it's been a while since we last met. I want to know everything, what's been happening, and catch up with you. And so maybe tell us, how have you been? What's going on?
Yeah, it's been 1.5 years since we've seen each other. So this might turn into a friends catching up, which is nice as well. A lot has happened. We've moved away from Barcelona to Berlin, which is such a vibrant startup city. And it's been really, really great to be here. Yeah, just many things happened on all sides, new opportunities, really also seeing and understanding what they say when they mean that fundraising is tough in an economic downturn. So, you know, lots of ups and downs. On a personal side, I got married, so that was a super, super cool highlight.
Congrats again. I already said congrats off the camera, off the recording, but congrats again.
Thank you. I'm not giving up on my name yet. We've put a lot of work into the branding of Linux. And also, of course, it's always a personal brand behind the VCs. And that's I think, what founders see and value. So, I'm going to give it up officially as well, but not yet.
I love it, Paulina. So let's dive right into it. You've been... you've been setting up a global fund. That's what I found out recently from you. You've been setting up a global fund for a Korean state fund while running a VC at the same time, which sounds like a crazy adventure. What's one thing that keeps you sane during the chaos?
Multiple things. The cool answer would probably be going running, doing a lot of sports, meeting friends, and so on. I think the true but maybe more boring answer is indeed my business partner, who's just a very balanced person and who kind of helps me to center within the chaos. I do have to say, though, that I am generally, I love organizing and I love having different projects that I can kick forward and having the oversight of that. So the chaos is not something that I feel uncomfortable with, let's say.
Right. Pauli, so fundraising for a year sounds exhausting. What's one piece of advice you'd give to someone, who's about to start, or like one thing you wish someone told you when you were starting?
I think what a lot of people told us was it'll take twice as long and you need twice as much money as you initially want. Of course, for a VC fund, that's different because there is an amount of money that you want to raise and there's a strategy behind that. But that's the startup advice that I've heard many times. And on the one hand, I see that there's some truth to it. On the other hand, I also feel like what I have seen being successful fundraisers in the past over the many startups that we've analyzed and also invested in is that those that are successful, they really have a plan to it. They're extremely good at communicating their added value. What do they do in the simplest words and why do they do it so much better? Mm-hmm. And they are really good at creating maybe a bit of FOMO about their brand as well. And it's not just being out fundraising for 1 year and then that turns into 2 years. You know, I think that this twice as much and twice as long, this advice, it might lead founders into going into fundraise a bit unprepared, thinking it's going to be hard anyways, it's going to take a long time anyways, and I don't know what we're doing. And I would really, really recommend founders to really think about who are the investors that we want to speak to and then really organize the fundraise. And I've seen the quality of fundraising and how convincing the startups are differ so greatly. And the best ones were the ones that slightly told the environment that they might be fundraising within the next year, like going to conference saying, we're not fundraising right now, but this and this and so on. So it takes so much time running up to the fundraise as well, so much planning. It's not just, okay, now we sit down and we write an Excel of the investors that we want, but it really is integrated into the holistic strategy of the startup. And that's when I see startups fundraise most successfully. Mm-hmm. Then spreading the news about the upcoming fundraise, therewith getting some initial interest, some initial commitments. And then once they actually open, say, hey, we have this much, let's fill it up. For us as a VC fund, fundraising, of course, was super interesting and it opened so many doors. And I've been so grateful to get to know so many people that I probably would have never talked to if it wasn't for asking them for money, which by itself is always an awkward thing. I mean,
right?
It's always an awkward situation to ask someone for money. So what you really have to understand is how can you turn that into an opportunity for the other party? And I think that is what we've been learning, what we've been figuring out. How can it not be me asking you for money, but me offering you a really cool opportunity that you better not miss out? And that turning point, I think, is something that I don't have a one-fits-all answer to. It's something we're still learning, but that's what we're focusing on.
Well, generally, so the fundraising process is kind of, from what you're saying, should be kind of ongoing thing. It shouldn't actually start when you need it. It should be started like before you need it. You should think about it ahead. So so basically you never run out, like for startups, you never run out of money. For VCs, it's kind of similar, as you said, to what startups go through. So I would say that probably for you, like fundraising has been a large chunk of building Linux, which generally building Linux must have been a journey. What's one moment when you thought it might not work and how did you push through it?
Yeah, we very early in our fundraise, we had a large commitment of 4 million, 5 million, something in that range, from an anchor investor that we didn't have any ties with before. So it was not like the initial crowd of friends and family, let's say, but someone external. And then due to liquidity issues or capital allocation that then from that family office didn't go into high-risk capital, completely understandable within this time frame, that soft commitment was pulled back. And that was a moment where I thought like, okay, wow. Everyone said it's going to be so tough, but I expected many, many no's. But then we got the yes. And then I was like, okay, you know, maybe we're the ones where it's not going to be so tough. I mean, fundraising is this emotional roller coaster. And I think it's pretty normal to have those ups and downs. And then when that was pulled back, I was like, okay, and now we start from zero, but we've already communicated this commitment, which we had. So yeah, there was a moment where I was feeling completely like, okay, what are we going to do? do now and how do we handle this? And what we did was just speak to other VC funds that are fundraising and realize that every single one of the VC funds that we talked to had an important investor pull out. Every single one. There was not one that said, no, we never had someone actually take it back or, you know, reverse it. I mean, that's why it's a soft commitment, right? Otherwise, they would have signed something, and then that's when it's safe. It's when it's literally hard committed, LPA is signed. And that's when it's actually truly yours, so to say, for the taking. Disregarding, of course, the potential of default. But yeah, that was when really the community has helped me. And especially, I would say, in Berlin, from my experience, there is a very open community of emerging fund managers that are, so those that are doing it for the first, second, or third time, that are supporting each other. I have regular lunch meetings that are called emotional support lunch with, you know, people who became friends, where we're just talking about the good, bad, and the ugly, let's say, of fun things. So yeah, that definitely helped.
Polly, did it, because you're one of Europe's youngest managing or founding partner, does it have any impact on fundraising? Like, is it harder to fundraise when you're young and maybe less experienced and less you have less network? How does it work?
Yeah, I can't compare because I've never done it with more experience. I only have what I have. But I think also this in the beginning, for us, it was really about, okay, let's show how technology affine we are, how much we, you know, how we optimize our processes and so on. So, and then kind of, yeah, showcasing that we had our work experience before, we've had our academic success, and we wanted to turn this into the VC world, which has happened, like it has happened for many, many years. And it is a industry that prides itself with innovation and technology. So I do think that there is always place for new brains and new people to kind of push through and think things new. And I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing. However, I do have to say that there are, of course, people that say, hey, but you're managing a lot of money, and who gives you the life experience that you need? And, you know, having seen all of this, and maybe other people can do that better because they have more life experience. And to that, I think that's true. And that's why we cooperate with many co-investors. You're never investing alone. However, we are investing in the future.
Exactly. Right? And who will understand the future better than young people, right? Like, make decisions? Like, young people should make the decisions. They know what's going on better than, I don't know.
And for me, it's really also about creating synergies there, using the point of view that we have. And I think one visual that, or one story that really explains it well is that an early investor of Canva said that no one believed in them, but he did, because what they told him was that they're going to create basically a PowerPoint program that is visual first, because our generation is visual first. And that is the unique and big selling point of Canva and why it went so successful, because you're not just putting, you know, first of all the boxes, then you make it pretty, but first the box is pretty and then you put the design to it. And I think seeing the world and seeing how the world looks and the different glasses there are, I think that is a huge advantage that we can bring to the table and that we offer.
100% agree. Polly, impact investing is a oftentimes deeply personal thing for many people. What was the first moment in your life that made you care about, you know, making a difference?
No, I think with regards to that, I was born a rebel. Not really, but this is super interesting because I get asked these questions a lot, like, what made you think that? And I always thought that it makes sense to do good to this world. And I'm by no means the, you know, perfect, most sustainable person. Of course, we all have our own, you know, things to improve on. Yes, sometimes I am driving with a car or, you know, renting a car here in the city or some things like this. But generally, I always knew that I wanted to make a difference with the work that I do. And I also, I think I also grew up believing that I could make a difference. And I think this was a gift that was given to me early of, hey, believe in yourself and you can potentially create a change. And I think that's something that, that I'm very thankful for.
Amazing. It just comes naturally. You describe your leadership style as inclusive and empathetic. What was there a defining moment in your life that shaped, you know, how you think about leading today?
I don't think so. I think it's generally what you aspire to be like in a leader, and having worked for different bosses in that sense or leaders, and also, of course, seeing leaders be presented in the press of bigger companies and so on. I've always had role models and they all had one distinct feature. In Germany, we call it fördern und fordern, which means you challenge and you support. So it's this
fördern und fordern.
Fördern und fordern. So you challenge people to be their best, but you also support them. And I think this is what was always quite central to me, that I thought, okay, if I'm working with people and if I'm so lucky to work with really bright people as we always did at Linux, may that be interns or colleagues, then I do want to figure out what are they best at and kind of support them to get there. And I think that this could be described as inclusive and empathetic because I want to understand what the other person not only is feeling and so on. It's not only about being a shoulder if someone is sad, but it's also about actually enabling people to become their best self. And sometimes that also includes saying, hey, I think what you're doing right now is not where you could shine the brightest. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's this. Have you thought of this? So it's not all you know, happy clappy. It's also really understanding and trying to understand the people in your company and around.
Nice, Paul. I was asking because I remember when we were you know, filming Turn VC season one together. I remember talking about your early experiences in San Diego and like how it all like was starting with education and career for you. So I was thinking that maybe, you know, given what you were doing there, also it kind of impacted how you started thinking about that.
Yeah, definitely. It's I think it's always a summary, like a sum of all of the moments and people that have shaped you. And then you can, I guess, have sometimes the opportunity to let it affect you more or less. And I think this specific example of volunteering in the women's shelter or also feeding the homeless in downtown San Diego. Of course, those social projects at a quite early stage. This has also fueled my fire to make an impact and given me the aspect that as a 15-year-old girl in San Diego with a bit of a broken English, that I could help them and that I saw there, you know, how it made them feel better. So, yeah, I think it's in the end, it all comes down to a lot of moments.
Amazing. Pauli, as a female investor in, you know, still male dominated industry, how do you see your role in driving gender parity, both in your own fund and the wider ecosystem? I know you're pretty bullish about it, so go all in.
Yeah, I think what my mission is, if that is the word, is to work together. It's not to drive two genders further apart. It's to say, hey, look, we're all humans. Let's sit at a table. Let's act as if it's not such a big thing that you're a man and I'm a woman, and can we please move on? I think that there was a lot of work done by some early, you know, feminists who burned their bras and so on and said, hey, we have like a gender gap and we have this and we have this. And that was a bit extreme, but that was probably also important to wake up. And then there has been a lot of talk about women in leading positions being all elbows out and they cannot cooperate. And, you know, like all of this stigma that was put around successful women. And now I think it's time to move on and to believe in people and to look at business cases from the perspective of, hey, let's find good investments. And what I do want to remove from the investing industry is this error or this persona that we have of, okay, a young male entrepreneur from a good university. They don't have to be young. They don't So I think, I mean, the numbers show it, right? The best founders or the most successful founders are migrant founders and worldwide. Why? Because you have to overcome some obstacles early on in your life. So look, let's just see where the good ideas are coming from. And sometimes that requires, and that's how we're doing it from our end, to change your own processes, because you cannot, in a male-dominated world, you cannot just say, okay, yeah, I'm just going to go for the best case and then just still have a portfolio that is 95% male-dominated. Then you need to change something because you're missing out. That's just the case. You're missing out on the brilliant female founders, on the migrant founders, on the founders that have a different educational background and so on. So I do think that it has to start with investing from the investor, setting their own processes. And that's why we at Linox have said that we want to have a 50-50 female founder portfolio, meaning we can invest in all white, male, straight, young, well-educated teams, no problem. But we can also invest in the complete opposite, and it's just on a portfolio level, like on a societal level, we want to have 50-50. So we're not restricting us on a case-by-case basis, but we're setting up our processes, our brand, in such a way that our deal flow allows those companies to knock on our door because they know we are investing also in females.
Sounds great, Pauli. So let's talk, this is really something that I'm curious about. Let's talk about you setting up a, working on a fund with a Korean government institute. What excites you most about bringing Europe and Korea in the investment world? And maybe just set up a tone for this. Like, what is this all about? How did it come about?
Yeah, that's a good question. Basically, how did it come about? Network. I mean, this is one tip everyone tells you: network, network, network. And this has opened doors, and you have to meet 250 people that will not open door for one to open a door that brings you to Seoul, which was amazing. And so it was came out of our network that someone heard an opportunity and thought of us as being the right VC. In the end, what is happening is that there's a lot of innovation happening in Korea, a lot of technological advances, and a lot of startups are emerging there. But they don't only want to conquer Korea, but they want to go abroad, and they have Europe as a goal. And upon the question of, okay, why do you want to go to Europe? Why do you want to go to Germany? Because it was often mentioned that they wanted to Germany, was that it was Germany is the gateway to Europe and Europe is the gateway to the world. And there was this sentiment of, hey, let's go to Europe. And it was so healing, I almost want to say, as a proud European, to hear someone be very excited about Europe and be like, no, it's not, Europe is not the sick man of the world, but actually, Germany the sick man of Europe, but actually Europe really has its advantages, and they and they listed them manifold. And so I'm excited about their technological advances that are and incomparable to what we have seen here, the speed at which the work is done, also the scale, like it's not, okay, we want to fundraise next year. It's we want to IPO next year. And it's really, I feel like it's like an American dream with Korean or Asian speed, technological advancements, also understanding of technology. And then brought to Europe to scale here, because here there's actually still a large industrial industry that requires technological advancements in order to make the next step. So that is what I'm most excited about, for Linox to be the partner that sets up a global fund that brings that to Europe and actually helps to scale what's working there already and scale that here.
Amazing. I look forward to see how it's going to unfold. Sounds super exciting. Pauli, Vists are known for asking tough questions. So here's one for you. What's one belief you hold about impact investing that most people disagree with?
That most people disagree with? That impact investing does not bring the same returns as general investing. I set up Linox to prove that if we invest smart in sustainable companies, we can and will outperform. Mic drop out of here.
Amazing. I love it. Exactly. Impact investing doesn't mean smaller returns, right?
Let's hope we show that soon. No, we're already showing that with our existing portfolio, but I'm really excited to make this known and to make this also the expectation we have from impact investing, that it is not reduced in terms of returns, but quite the opposite.
Awesome. Pauli, this is going to be the last one. If you could write a letter to your future self 10 years from now, what would you thank her for achieving, and what would you warn her not to lose sight of?
I thought the last question was what would I want to keep pushing? Yeah, I don't know. I think life is kind of lived forward and understood backwards, right? So that letter would be much more helpful right now if I wrote it in the future to myself right now. I guess listen to your gut feeling. Trust the people that you can trust, believe in your own skills, and in the end intuition and following some doors that have been opened led us to really, really cool opportunities that turned out good, and following that, following the gut feeling with that, I think that's going to be the advice.
Right. You're so awesome. It's such a pleasure to have this conversation with you. Thanks for joining me. Maybe to end it off, do you have any exciting projects or new initiatives that you would like to share with the audience?
Yes, apart from the Korean project and our main fund, I'm also engaged in one other project that I'm not yet... that we're not yet making official, let's say, but there is another role coming our way that is personally pretty exciting and from a career point of view also really really, really cool.
When will we hear more about it?
That I also would like to know.
sounds good. Pauli, thank you so much for joining me on the show today. It's been such a pleasure, as always. And I hope to see you soon in Barcelona.
See you soon. Thank you. Bye.